Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up? This
is a good recording, man.
Yeah, brother, dig it. Solid. Right on.
Welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Hey, good morning to you, Connor. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
You've made the adjustment?
I think I said this a couple days ago, but the adjustment was made a couple weeks. I think as soon as we went from 75 to like what?
We went from 70 who?
Weather-wise.
There was 70 degrees around here?
Yeah, it was like that, what, like last week, wasn't it?
I don't... You don't
remember that, Earl?
Well, let's ask my co-host. It's Friday. And so, Sandy, do you remember anything? He's talking about 70 degrees?
Yeah, it's hard to remember. And he's right. 8 days ago, we were dressed for summer, it's cold.
Yeah, it's cold all over the nation, Sandy.
I couldn't believe it. The map. But one thing we can count our lucky stars.
Didn't get the snow.
We don't live in Buffalo, New York.
Right, man. 3 feet of snow. They're talking about.
Yeah. Maybe 4. It was like they were talking. When we talk about 2 to 4 inches, they're talking about 2 to 4 feet.
I know.
Well, we don't know. It's kind of like one or two yards of snow.
You know, Sandy and Connor, you know, winter doesn't officially start until December 21st. I mean, that's on the map. It tells you. That's when winter officially starts, and so this weather we're getting is January weather.
Yeah, that's what I used to think when I was a kid, but I'm an adult now, so.
So what?
So,
the calendar doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. I remember my grandma used to say.
When did you declare adulthood? When did you declare adulthood?
I was joking, but no, when I was a kid, I would always say, oh, it's winter. Or no, it's winter doesn't start until December. My grandma would say, no, it's now. Because it would just start having massive snowstorms in Chicago in like November. It was just, you know, that's what it was.
Yeah, you know.
That's the way Milwaukee is in the spring. Spring happens like one day, and like May 4th, we have spring.
It just comes out of nowhere.
Winter to summer, yeah.
Well, the good thing is, if we can survive a few more days of these 20-degree temperatures, 45 degrees, which is the normal temperature for this time of year, we're going back to the 40s. And I think we'll celebrate the 40s, right?
Yeah, and then don't you remember, like in the spring when it turns 45, people put their tops down on their cars,
yeah.
And they're like,
"Yeah, you know, when you live in the Midwest, and I don't know, Sandy, you've lived in warmer climates, have you? I mean, I don't know.
No. I never lived in any place warmer than New York City. Was as far south as I ever lived. It is
not very far. So you certainly had the ability to move to the warmer climates. Why was it never a priority with you? I'm just curious.
This is a hardy living. You know, most of the great scientific and other advances made by mankind were made in northern climates. If you live in the south, you know, and it's warm. You just, you know, you're probably sipping some kind of a drink sitting on the beach. You don't feel any need. You know, necessity is the mother of invention. You know, and it's when you're locked in your house and it's cold, you're going to figure out something else.
So, no,
I think, I like seasons. I like winter. I think winter is a great challenge. I think skating and skiing and when I used to do lots of running, actually running in the cold weather was much more fun than running in the warm weather.
So you are saying that you're not saying that the people who live in the warm weather aren't hardy, are you?
Yeah, I'm saying.
Yeah, Tom's going to call and have a few choice words for you, Sandy.
Yeah, they're soft. Those people are soft.
You know, that's a funny thing to say, Sandy. But you know, we'll get through this, right? I mean, we've gotten through this. This is part of our DNA.
No, this is fantastic. I'm celebrating, actually. Not really.
Well,
I wouldn't say I'm that happy about it. But
what I am doing is trying to figure out just what coat I've got that's quite warm enough.
Yeah. Well, you know, people preparing to go up north. Some places, 2-3 feet of snow, and they're going to deer hunt.
Hunting.
And let me ask you: did you ever deer hunt?
I never deer hunted, and quite frankly, I the more I'm around nature, I look at these deer and think, God, they're really fantastic. I can't imagine shooting one, you know. So it's not, you know, I don't have to shoot the cows that I've sort of given up on meat, but I didn't have to shoot the cows I ate, so I didn't. I should have had the same feeling about them, but I'm not a. I did, bird hunting is as far as I got in terms of shooting animals, and then I shot some pheasant and felt them wiggling around in my pocket when I thought they were already done. And
wow,
and that was like, yeah, you know what? I'm not sure I even like this too much.
Yeah, you know, Sandy, never deer hunted. Got some folk I know who do, and so they've always told me it's a big party, right? I mean, you go in the woods and you bring some courage in a bottle with you, you know, alcohol.
And a gun.
Yeah.
What a great
man. You get drunk and shoot deer, Earl.
Yeah.
You know.
Talk about a good time.
That's great.
You know, but they have improved and done a better job. You know, you could go back years and, a lot of people would get shot and instead of the deer.
Now people get shot. They fall out of their deer stand with their gun and shoot themselves.
You know.
There's all kinds of ways you can have fun when you hunt, you know.
You know, I don't know, man. This is a guy thing, right? I mean, there's not a lot of women that go deer hunting.
Not near enough, probably.
Yeah. So all these guys go hang out. They're at the local bar in these places, in these towns, because that's kind of what it is. They go to kind of remote towns, right? I mean, and the local bar, they look forward to this. It's all year.
Yeah, I suspect some wives put the GPS on their husband to make sure that they actually are going out in the woods.
For the four-legged deer and not the two-legged.
Exactly.
Deer. it's an amazing thing. But you know, that's sport. And
you know, here's one thing that's unusual. Maybe it's, I don't know if it's only in Wisconsin, but everyone in Wisconsin, no matter where you live, goes up north. We go up north from Milwaukee to places about as far north as Green Bay. And when you're in Green Bay, they talk about going up north.
Superior, then, yeah.
Yeah, they go up to, you know, up to Upper Michigan or something. I wonder, you know, does our kind of people just want to migrate to the north? You know, we have a north-south axis.
And colder, you know.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
That's the whole principle, going up north.
You know, I've been noticing, Sandy, maybe you can help me out because, you know, I'm just a black guy who doesn't know any better. I see these students walking around here going
in
to Carroll College.
Are you talking?
No, I mean with no socks
with no
on.
No socks on.
Really?
Yeah, what is that about?
Like their face is covered, but they just have no socks.
Yeah, and it's, man, it's all these young people. What is that? In the last few days, the really cold weather, no socks.
And, you know, I don't know.
That's not Sandy Williams, huh?
I'm a white guy. But I think the same thing. I watch college kids walking around in shorts, you know, in cold weather, too. Like, what's going on? Is it some kind of lower extremity? Maybe everyone's numb from the knees down.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, man, but I thought you might know. You were once a college kid.
Maybe the reason they do it is they're numb from the neck.
You know, you were once a college kid. Maybe that's what you did in New York when it was cold.
I was in Boston when I was in college, and I wore socks.
Oh, okay. That must be a new thing. But anyway, it's in a few days things will warm up, and we can talk about many other things. A lot of things that we're going to be talking about today, Sandy. The football game last night. They still have, Sandy, 7 football games. Where do they go from here?
I think, is it 7 or 6?
6. Well, what is it? What is their record now?
They're 4-7.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
I think they got 6 games.
6 more. Where do they go from here?
They can't. They hit rock bottom.
Sandy's at a loss for words. I can't believe it.
I think they ought to pull their socks up. That's one thing.
I think we've got a young lady who's going to explain to us why they don't wear socks in the winter. But anyway, we've got to go to a break. I can't wait to get to that. Hang on. We got to go to a break. It's Monday. Oh,
it's Friday.
it's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams and you. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams. And let's go to the phone lines. And Gene from Eau Claire. Hey, good morning, Gene. How you doing?
Well, good morning, guys. This is a great show. I've been just laughing so hard. Earl, we're going to be the same age in a couple months here, and I just want to give you a little bit of history about hunting from the other side of the state.
Okay.
My grandfather, who had, 8 kids, and they lived in a field of sandburrs and things, and they went hunting, and they would hang their deer in the tree for the winter, because that was the refrigerator, and they would, you know, eat the meat of the deer, and they'd just have good meat for quite a long time, and they'd go to my grandpa's, and there would be the deer hanging in the trees. And so all of those men in that family grew up, and they all went hunting, and they got their deer for the year, and it got to be kind of a tradition, I think, and everybody, you know, get all their stuff packed and where they're going to stay, or a lot of people who live in the area would, you know, have everything ready, and then they'd be going out to their stand, and they're sitting out there all day long. And then at night, they'd go to the bars and see who's getting the deer and where the deer, you know, where they were finding the deer, because you got to find the deer before, you know, you get your meal. And I think now, you know, I think the tradition's, you know, losing a lot of people. However, when they get the deer now, they're donating, a lot of them are donating them to food pantries, and which is really helpful because a lot of people around here then get meat, you know, when it's real difficult. So, but you're right, though, those guys are comical, and they love their hunting, and they live for this, and I think the stores do real good for all the new gear that they have, you know, and things like that. But I just had to add that because it started as a necessity, and I think that it continues as a tradition, although I think it's losing a lot, you know, of... you know, it's charm because people don't like to shoot deer, and I have deer around me, and I just hope they hide at my place so that they, you know, don't get shot. I'll make a little whistle noise, like, come over here so you don't get shot. So anyway, you guys have a great day. I just love this show. Hey, thank you so much.
Hey, Gene, thank you very much for the call. Thank you for listening. You know, Sandy, the grandfathers and great-grandfathers of the hunters of today didn't have cameras that they can sit out and watch the deer, you know, for the entire summer and spring and know who the deer are because they've got this video of the deer coming by. It's certainly a lot easier now, right?
I suspect it is. We probably also have more deer. I don't know. I mean, the deer are proliferating and prospering in today's world. So, yeah, I don't make any value judgment about deer hunting.
No, I'm not saying people shouldn't.
I know. I'm just not going to do it myself. And I think most people who deer hunt will tell you that they're going to eat the deer. I just haven't eaten much venison myself, and it's not what I'm going to rely on.
Well, so clearly there is conservation. Conservation is real. Conservation is needed. If they did not harvest the deer, it would be difficult for those areas where the deer live. For the
people. Well, actually, I think the scientists will tell you the reason we have so many deer is we don't have wolves. We've upset the whole food chain. And I read a thing that talked about how when you introduce wolves, you end up with a much healthier deer population and it changes waterways. It's got an unbelievable effect. But we've taken what was the most important animal predator out of the ecosystem, and it's changed things.
You know, Sandy, the system was so perfect. The ecosystem was so perfect the way it was set up. And, yeah, man has changed it, altered it. And when I hear people, because we're going to talk a little bit later on in the show about the ecosystem, we're going to talk about people who still don't believe that man has done any damage to the system. And clearly it's happened. But we're going to certainly talk about it a little bit. You know, Sandy, Elon Musk... you know, we're going to talk about before we go to break. Here's a man who spent $44 billion to take over this project. I don't think he did his homework, Sandy. Do you?
Well, I don't know. I think he's impulsive. I think it was an impulsive, you know, I think he's one of these people where the challenge is more important than the money. And I think money, it's a little like playing a Monopoly game for him. And I think he decided it would be interesting and maybe from a socio-political standpoint, maybe important, he thought, to take over Twitter and make changes. But yeah. You know, it's hard. I think everyone scratched their head a little bit and tried to figure out why Twitter was worth a bunch of money, because its revenue stream is infinitesimal. It's not a big money generator. And And so he paid a lot for it. Now he's trying to figure out how he can make it pay for itself and how he can get it to pay off the debt that he undertook to buy it.
But so, his ego, Sandy. His ego got in the way, right?
It could well be his ego, or it could be just the kind of judgment that he exercises, where he wanted to make some kind of an impact, and he wasn't so worried about money. But yeah, his ego has maybe got in the way, or at least something got in the way of his making a hard financial judgment. He's clearly, and the workers at Twitter are now experiencing an extreme change.
So hold that thought, Sandy. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. It means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
It's calls are for cabs. You probably take me for a half.
You don't love me. You're a faker. You just want me for my acres.
All right. Welcome back to... where are we at, Sandy?
We were talking about Elon Musk.
I know. Welcome back to the Erlinger Show, as always.
You want to know where we were? What we were? You were really lost. I did it.
844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. So Sandy, Elon Musk.
So you have to understand, you know, when someone takes over a company like Elon Musk did, he put about half of his own money in it, and he borrowed the other half, and so. When you borrow money, you're going to have to pay, but you're going to have to pay it back. You have to pay interest. You got to pay back the principal. So you've got to start either coughing up more money out of your own pocket or generating the money out of the business you bought. So he's busily now trying to figure out how to generate more revenue out of Twitter than it was generating before he bought it, because it didn't have all that debt that it was dealing with before. This is a common problem with takeovers. And so, you know, I think what's happened here is that maybe he had a wake-up call and that he maybe didn't understand the extent to which the tech industry generates revenue from ads in a manner that is difficult to comprehend exactly. Twitter isn't a natural vehicle for advertising. I've never noticed any sort of advertisements when I'm looking at Twitter. Have you?
You know, I don't. Maybe I.
You don't tweet.
No, I don't tweet.
Yeah, I don't tweet either. I can't really. I can't be very knowledgeable. But you know, Connor might know something about Twitter.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because there really isn't. Like, there are ads advertisements on Twitter. They exist. It's just that they don't really get the same traffic as
like
other
Facebook
platforms. Like Facebook. Yeah. Like, because a lot of, like, it's mostly either a lot of memes or a lot of journalists and professional commentators talking about issues and things. So it's more of like a public forum for conversation. So there really isn't a lot of places to place ads in comparison to Instagram or Facebook, where people will literally spend like hours on the platform looking at content, you know, like watching videos, watching musicians or artists or their favorite influencer. Twitter's more of a conversational space, so people don't have the time.
So I've heard the term. What is a meme?
A meme? It's just a repeated
Sandy,
joke.
You know what a meme is?
Well, not exactly.
Yeah, it's a repeated joke with some like significance.
I'm really disappointed, man. Sandy knows everything, and he doesn't know what a meme is.
Yeah, and I gotta admit that I don't know everything. Truth is not a problem.
Good for being humble, Sandy.
Memes are what trolls do. I'm not sure what a troll is either.
Trolls don't do memes. Memes are funny. You guys gotta check out some funny memes. They're like half of my source of humor for the day.
I see.
Okay. Well. All right. So Sandy. So he's certainly cut the payroll in half, and now the people who he was counting on have told him, "Screw you. We're not. We'll just walk away."
Well, he did more than cut payroll in half. Yesterday, he sent out a memo to everyone saying, look, you might want to resign. You can resign with 3 months' pay. And incidentally, if you keep on working, I'm going to ask you to work long, hard hours. And, you know, it basically was saying, look, things are changing at Twitter. You're going to work your tails off here, and you're going to work as hard as I do. And I think a lot of people scratched their heads and said, maybe not.
Yeah, maybe I don't want to do this anymore.
So, Sandy, in the end, he's kind of painted himself into a corner. I mean, he doesn't know.
We'll see.
He's got access to a lot of different people, you know, who know a lot of different things and who can figure things out. Let's just be clear. He does have access to people like that. But it's going to take time for them to figure out the inner workings of a company like that.
Well, I think the question is genius fungible? Can a genius do anything? If a genius can do something with genius, can they do everything with genius? And he maybe is the guy trying to test that theory, because he clearly is genius. His, you know, 5 years ago, he was on the brink of bankruptcy with Tesla. 5 years later, he's the richest man in the world because he hung in there. He figured out how to do it. He was tenacious. He's imaginative. So I think he probably has this feeling that he can accomplish anything if he accomplished that. You know, he's accomplished putting things in space. You know, he's got, you know, the guy has got a capacity to accomplish a great deal. And so maybe he thinks he can do anything. And maybe this is the way you test fallibility, by finding out that you can't. But
Sandy, I guess a guy like that is kind of quirky, right? He's a quirky guy, right?
Well, yes, he's a self-described. He's described himself as being on the spectrum, as having a level of Asperger syndrome. He acknowledges that he's got a lot of differences about him. He's obviously extremely intelligent, extremely tenacious, has the capacity to be very successful. Now he's testing it, and it's kind of like someone who can fly deciding that they're going to dive to the bottom of the ocean. Maybe they can't swim.
And let's be honest. Let's say somehow Twitter fails. It's not exactly the end of the world, right? I don't know, Connor, is it? I don't know. You guys.
I mean, if Twitter failed tomorrow, I'd be smiling. I'd be very happy because Twitter is not a very nice place.
Really?
But yeah, it's not. I don't like Twitter very much. I mean, personally, I like it for news.
But to the extent that I'm familiar with Twitter, I don't quite understand it. The 142 letters or whatever the limit is, and the things that people say on the whole hashtag thing strikes me as being a little too faddish and not very content ridden. It's more like a very sarcastic jab. It's filled with sarcastic jabs.
Yeah, it gets to a point where it's not like a very trustworthy place. Like the other day, RIP Jimmy Fallon started trending on Twitter. And then it's like, he's not dead or anything, but it just started trending because it's just a trend. You know, it's just a sarcastic jab, like what you said. But then Jimmy Fallon logs in like, oh my God, am I dead or something? Like, that's scary. Well, you know, and that's one example. But
well, maybe that's why I'm not on Twitter.
You're on Twitter. We're streaming on Twitter right now.
Oh well, okay. Well, maybe why I don't engage in Twitter.
I it'd be fun to see you engage in Twitter, Earl. I'd be.
Well, only if Sandy will pledge to do it.
Well, I've always enjoyed sarcasm, but I haven't enjoyed it in that context where everything is sarcastic.
No.
No, really. I think that is the medium that is Twitter. It is 100% cynicism and sarcasm, as far as I can tell.
I'm gonna go on it this afternoon, Connor, because you said it.
It's 50-50. Like, it's either going to be dead sarcasm or, like, real serious news. I get a lot of my news from Twitter, so you just got to control it. You know, pick the accounts you want.
Well, listen, how bad can it really be? I listen to Fox News sometimes. It can't be quite as bad as Fox News. Anyway, let's go to Tom from L.A. Hey, Tom, what's going on, man?
Hey, Earl, first off, we the people are the government, and we must never forget that. Second, If you do get on Twitter, please let us know your handle, because it would be very important.
At Earl Show, at Earl underscore show on Twitter.
Is it at Earl underscore show? Sandy, I have a handle.
I've arrived. So, Earl, but here's the great thing about Twitter. Okay, first off, it does not take a genius to run Twitter. So Elon Musk is getting much more credit than he deserves for being a genius, because there is no genius. Jack might have been more of a genius, the guy who invented it in the first place. But Twitter, basically what it can do, which is a positive, is that it can broadcast a message out to a large group of people about politics and about what's going on.
Okay.
So as an example, I might have a hashtag on there called Get Money Out, right? Which is all about getting money out. There may be a politician on there. I mean, look, the thing that happened in Egypt, that would have never happened without Twitter.
Yeah.
Telling everyone to meet at the square.
Right.
Or whatever it was, that would have never happened without Twitter. So it's, for me, I don't really write a lot on Twitter, and I don't engage with anybody on Twitter in terms of, having like food fights with. What I do is I mainly retweet. So everyone that's following me, because I have about 4,000 followers, can actually get that same message out, which might be about getting money out of politics, or. What it's also good for is just supporting the people that that you like what it was that they wrote on a Twitter feed. The main two things on Twitter are retweets and likes. Those are the two main things. And the thing is, it doesn't take, honestly, as much time in your life, because it is kind of surrounded around politics, than like Facebook. Facebook is more about, like, classmates, what I mean? It's more about getting together, talking, blah blah blah. Whereas Twitter is just—it's nice because it does give you only a certain amount of characters. So and you can actually put on links on there as well, and you can put videos on there. But the thing is, you don't have to sit on there all day typing, or feel like you have to. And I really don't feel like it's as like Connor said, you can make it what it is, right? So you can. Like me, I pretty much follow a lot of people I don't even follow that many people, honestly. But the thing is, I'm in the community of people that I want to know information from them so I can forward that to you. So as an example, if there's some type of voter suppression going on by Greg Palast, I could actually send that over to you, Earl, that you may not know about. And then maybe you can talk about that on the show.
So you would say that there is some value to Twitter
is my favorite.
Yeah.
Twitter is my favorite. And I would say for entertainment, TikTok is my favorite, because I can just watch videos, but I don't have to comment on them or anything like that.
That's right. You're still a young guy. Here's
the other thing.
I'll vote for TikTok. I think TikTok is an interesting vehicle and gets more interesting because it's got a whole range of content that you can select from.
No, Sandy, you're on TikTok. I've never been on TikTok.
I'm not on TikTok. I don't broadcast on TikTok. Sandy, but I can.
The problem with TikTok, though, is you have to actually make a video. You know what I'm saying? It's not like Twitter, where you can just do a quick write and say, hey, make sure everyone get out to vote. GOTV. I did a lot with Souls to the Polls. I did a lot of Souls to the Polls, WI.org. So therefore, everyone that follows me can actually find out more information about it. So therefore, they can actually get involved in it. And like I said, I use it more as a broadcasting tool than I do anything else.
Hey, Tom,
but I wanted to say one more thing, Earl, before I go. You were talking the other day about the, and I think it's something we really got to bring up more and more. Is you were talking about the person that was hungry and homeless, and you were helping them out. Like I said, my income is closer to the person on the street than it is towards the billionaire. So the thing is, we need to take the money that was used for those elections and put it towards things like helping the homeless and helping that person that needed a meal, rather than putting Elon Musk, which is a simple company he's running, up in higher status. We need to actually look at these billionaire class, and if they would just pay their taxes, you know what? It might be a more equity type world.
Hey, Tom. And, hey, Tom, yeah. We got to go, man. Thank you very much for the call.
But
Sandy, I've got to catch up to you, man. You're on Twitter. I mean,
no, I'm not.
I mean, you're not on Twitter.
I'm not on TikTok.
But you've been on TikTok. You've seen it.
Actually, I just want to say briefly, Tom's little summary there is the best education I've had so far on social media. People talk about it, and I've never really had it explained how it's used, but that was useful.
Yeah, it was. And now that I know you spent some time on TikTok, maybe I got to catch up with you, man. If you're on TikTok, it means I got to join it. Oh, I'm already mm-hmm. on it. Connor says I'm already there. I got.
Yeah, I've seen you on it, Earl. We got to take a break here.
Right. Okay, you got to go to a break. April, maybe during the break, Connor can. I know who that is. That's Prince.
That's Prince, yeah. I knew that too.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, can you explain to the listening audience where we are right now with... the debt ceiling and what actually happens, and why is it that we're always at this crossroads with the debt ceiling? Why can't we fix that? Why do we always have to, every year, we're at the same place? Why can't we get that fixed?
Well, I mean, it has to do with the fact that the debt is, the way we run our government, the way we operate, the debt is an ever-expanding thing. So, you know, it's, you set a ceiling, but you know that you're going to exceed that ceiling if you continue to operate in the same manner that you have for the past 75 years. And so instead of having an unlimited ceiling, they set it in increments. They set the increments relatively low, so that they're pretty certain they're going to run into it again quite quickly. So it becomes a political tool that hopefully never gets used, because everyone understands that if we interrupted payments on our debt, we would put ourselves into a very dire position. So it's kind of like, oh, I don't know, it's like the punishment your parents would tell you they might, you know, we're going to ground you for 2 months if you do that. And they're never going to do that. You know they're not going to do that. And it's not really the deterrent they think it is, but it's a big threat. And so far, that's the way the whole debt limit has been treated by Congress. You know, they talk about interrupting debt payments, but they never do it. And it would be a very dire thing to do. We're going to continue to run into it as long as we have a ceiling imposed. And as long as we continue to operate as we do, and we will. I mean, we aren't ever probably going to operate with balanced budgets
ever again, huh?
Yeah.
You know, so the debt ceiling, they set a budget every year. The federal government sets their budget knowing that they're going to exceed it. But having
the budget normally has built into it a deficit. So the budget is the federal government is not required to pass a balanced budget, and it isn't passing balanced budgets. The budgets that they adopt have relatively well forecasted deficits that will be the result of that budget. And every annual budget isn't going to result in a breaking through the debt ceiling, but it's now happening with greater frequency because, quite frankly, our debt is expanding at a greater rate than it has in the past. we will be okay with expanding national debt so long as our GDP continues to grow materially at a material rate. It's much like a family taking on the mortgage for a more expensive home. When the family's income goes up, it's okay to have more debt and a higher mortgage if your income is growing materially and you can afford it. So as long as our GDP grows enough, we can afford to have additional debt. We're going to have a problem if our GDP stops growing, shrinks, if we have a serious recession meaning a shrinking GDP, if we had a depression, meaning a substantially shrinking GDP, then the national debt becomes a bit of a dicey issue.
So the national debt, $31 trillion or whatever it is something that we can manage as a country. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's $1 trillion or $50 trillion, we'll still be able to handle it is because it's growing like that. I mean, in no time, it'll be $50
trillion. Well, the question is, what is the GDP, what is the gross domestic product of our economy when it's $50 trillion? We couldn't have tolerated $31 trillion as national debt 60 years ago because our GDP wouldn't have been big enough to support it. But our GDP has grown substantially in that interim period, so we can support a larger debt. So economists would say it's all about the relationship between GDP and debt. And, you know, that's simplified. It's oversimplifying the discussion, but that is the on the most basic terms, that's the analysis that people that do, and that's the analysis economists do. We do have a problem with rising interest rates and inflation that drives interest rates up, drives up the cost of carrying the debt, so that the amount of debt we can carry diminishes in the situation in which we have a higher prevailing interest rate. So $31 trillion could be comfortable with the current GDP, but if the federal interest rate were 20%, then we wouldn't be able to support that much debt.
So then what happens if going back to, I guess, the last time Jimmy Carter was president and that reality happened? So what would happen then?
Well, that reality happened at a time when the national debt really wasn't as large as it is now. We have had very material growth of it. Even as a percentage of GDP, we've had a growth of national debt since 1979, 1980. But at that time, you know, we had a serious recession, but we didn't have any threat that we were going to default. And none of this ever involves defaulting on federal obligations because we can meet the federal obligations with a stroke of a pen. You know.
So the reason I ask you, Sandy, is because, you know, it's always the Democrats and the Republicans, the Hatfields and the McCoys, who clearly want to play games with this. We're not going to, you know, override it. We're not going to do this, and that's just bravado, I guess, is what you're saying.
Well, the national debt is something we owe for money we spent that's in the rearview mirror. We already spent.
No, I know about the national debt. I'm talking about Sandy, the overriding the debt ceiling.
Well, my point is that the debt ceiling has to be increased because of expenditures we've already made.
Okay,
so Congress trying to put a lid on the debt ceiling it's not even a very possible circumstance, right? Because the debt is already incurred, the obligation is already there. It would be a question of saying, basically, we're not going to pay our debts.
Which is not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
All right. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That means Friday is with Sandy Williams. You two can join us. We'll got to go to a break. We'll be right back.